Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Tejas Networks conference call on strategic investments by Tata Sons, hosted by Motilal Oswal Financial Services. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone telephone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Mukul Garg of Motilal Oswal Financial Services. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Karuna. Hi everyone. Thanks and welcome to the call with Tejas Networks senior management today. Today we have with us Mr. Sanjay Nayak, CEO Tejas Networks, and Mr. Venkatesh Gadiyar, CFO of Tejas Networks. I will now hand over the call to Sanjay for his initial comment, and then probably we can open up the call for Q&A. Sanjay, over to you.
Thank you, Mukul. Good afternoon, everybody. It's again good to talk to you. We had uploaded a few slides of investor update on our website, which I hope you had a chance to look at. I will be initially covering those slides, and then, of course, we'll be taking questions and answers, as Mukul had mentioned earlier. So starting off, safe harbor statement, I hope you had a chance to look at that. And there are some additional disclaimers in terms of, the information that you should be looking at and be aware of in terms of the proposed transaction. Now I'm on to the main slide of the presentation. The title says, Tejas's vision and our journey so far. So if you know, we created Tejas, or we started Tejas about 21 years back to create a top-tier global telecom and networking company from India. So if I were to break our journey, there are different phases. So Tejas 1.0 was really about starting off with a very highly talented team with an ambitious dream. And we are all first-generation entrepreneurs backed by world-class venture capital and private equity investors. We focused on R&D to create globally competitive and award-winning optical networking products. And in addition, in the company, we built end-to-end product life cycle processes spanning technology, sales, customer support, and manufacturing operations. And I must say that we achieved significant customer success where our products were deployed in several countries around the world. Then we had Tejas 2.0, which was the next phase of our journey, which started off where we built up a successful platform for world-class telecom products. And this Tejas 2.0 journey really started off when we, as the first deep tech product company, got publicly listed in India in 2017. We, of course, increased our presence in the Indian market, both in the government as well as the private telcos. We expanded our international sales, and we have customers in more than 75 countries. We expanded our product portfolio beyond optical transmission and added broadband access on fiber, as well as wireless on LTE technology, which is the technology for 4G and 5G. We have built a very rich portfolio of intellectual property, which consists of 349 patents, more than 300 silicon IPs, and millions of lines of field-proven software. We have a strong customer endorsement in the form of run rate and repeat business, which I've been talking about in our earnings call as well. And we have clearly established a successful track record of cutting-edge, high-quality products that can compete with the best in the world. So as you saw, all of this is working well, and we have seen it reflected in our financial performance over the last few quarters. We have seen consistent growth in terms of all the metrics that we can think of. Having reached so far, we've been looking at that, do we have a much bigger opportunity? Do we have a much bigger global play? And that's what I call Tejas 3.0, which is a new milestone, a new beginning for us. What this really reflects is that globally, there's a new CapEx cycle driven by growth of data consumption, rollout of 5G networks, and fiber-based broadband networks, especially in the post-COVID world. There's a very large addressable market opportunity globally, and as you know, telecom equipment business is a $150 billion industry annually. The geopolitical developments around the world have created a need for trusted telecom products in many countries. And of course, in India, we have a very large home market with favorable government policies for Atmanirbhar Bharat and telecom. On the technology front, again, a lot of disruption is happening. At a broad level, there's softwarization of telecom networks, emergence of open architecture, and new technology trends starting with 5G. and we have an opportunity to leverage the world-class technology talent in India, having the capability to build cutting-edge products. And in fact, the majority of world's telecom products have a lot of R&D people in India. We have also evolved into a very unique business model where we can use the India-based R&D cost advantage and the asset-light manufacturing model to actually generate significantly good financial performance. But with all this opportunity being available, what does it take to really accelerate our vision and reach our true potential? So when we looked at that, there are a few things which came out. Number one was global branding and relationship. That is something which is an essential feature that is required, and it's not just for Tejas but for India as a country, because we are not known in the world as a destination or a source for high-tech products. We are known for high-tech services. The second thing, since we compete with companies in the world who are much larger than us, we need a lot more balance sheet strength. That is what gives the confidence to global tier one telco customers for large contracts. Secondly, we also have to look at balance sheet strength to be able to make adequate R&D investments both through organic as well as inorganic routes. And being in the electronics and hardware business, we have to have global economies of scale in terms of hardware manufacturing. When we looked at all of this, we looked at the opportunity and we looked at what it would take for us to accelerate our vision. It was very clear to us that there is a need for a strategic partnership which will allow us to convert this large opportunity into actual market share. Having done that, we are very happy to announce, which we did last week, our strategic investment from Tata Sons. And I wanted to clarify, this is through Panatone Investments, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of Tata Sons and not another operating company, to acquire majority stake in Tejas through the following routes. A lot of this information has been shared already in our press release and in the various filings. But just to summarize, the investment consists of a few portions. Number one is a preferential allotment of 500 crores, which will result into 1.94 crores of equity shares at a price of Rs. 258. Second, preferential allotment of 950 crores, totaling to 3.68 crores warrants, which we call Series A warrants, and each warrant could be converted into one equity share at an exercise price of 258 rupees per share. And these warrants could be exercisable in one or more tranches during a period commencing from the date of allotment until expiry of 11 months from the date of allotment. The third one is Series B warrants, which is of 400 crores, coming up to 1.55 crore warrants. And again, the same way that each warrant will be entitled to subscribe to one equity share at an exercise price of 258 rupees per share. And these Series B warrants will be exercisable from a period from a date of allotment until expiry of 12 months from the date of allotment to 18 months. So between 12 to 18 months, these warrants will be converted. The next one was acquisition of up to 13 lakh equity shares from Tejas Management at a per share price of not exceeding 258. And this would have amounted to 34 crores, but this would be in a form of a secondary investment and not a primary investment in the company. And last Friday, 12 lakhs were purchased out of the 13 lakhs. And because of all of this, there was an open offer to acquire up to 26% stake at, again, 258 rupees per share in accordance with the SEBI regulation. So this was the summary of the terms of investment, which is investment in the primary today and then preferential warrants, Series A and Series B. And the use of proceeds, invest in organically as well as inorganically to expand product portfolio and R&D. Second is investment in sales, marketing, and additional people. Third, in enhancing manufacturing and operation capabilities, including working capital expansion as we need, and other general corporate purposes. So this is how all the proceeds that we are raising would be utilized for the company. In terms of what are the strategic benefits of our deal with the Tatas, number one, as I said, if you correlate this with the handicap that we faced or the things that we needed to accelerate our journey in terms of being realizing our full potential, post-transaction, we become part of India's leading business group with a very strong brand. We get an opportunity to leverage synergies with Tata Group companies with access to wider global relationships, and many of the group companies are in businesses that we have overlap with. Third, capital infusion to provide balance sheet strength to invest for growth and expand our product portfolio, both organically and inorganically. The next one is opportunity to scale up our ambitions for Atmanirbhar Bharat in telecom. And overall, it gives us an opportunity to have a force multiplier effect to significantly accelerate our journey to becoming a top-tier, trusted, full-stack global telecom OEM and really convert the large TAM into actual market share in the years to come. So in summary, as you can see, we've had a fantastic journey so far. Being a product company from India, we have done a lot of good work to create a very, very robust platform, and this partnership allows us to really take the benefits of that platform and scale it up to global levels. At this point in time, I would pause and I would really open up the floor for questions from all of you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Thank you. The first question is from the line of Ritesh Pilaria from Girik Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and congratulations to the entire team for the fantastic team. So my question now is, Tejas so far was limited to certain value chain in the entire telecom infra. After this deal, does this our standing change, or you will evolve to the beyond what you are doing in the telecom infra? The second was, so far manufacturing presence also was limited. There was more of outsourcing and final assembling and quality control was inside. So how does this also change post the deal? And the immediate BSNL 4G and PLS things, if you can give us some updates, how does that also change with the Tata Center? That's it.
Okay. Thank you. So let me answer one by one. So number one, we would be expanding our product portfolio. So if you see when I described the Tejas 1.0, 2.0 and 3.0, in Tejas 1.0 we just had optical transmission product, then we added access product. Now our ambition is that both wireline and wireless products, both for 4G and 5G, is something that we will be expanding into. So really one change which will be there is a larger set of product portfolio and trying to become almost a full-line end-to-end product provider in the telecom value chain. So that's one part. Coming back to the second question that you had, that are we going to go and do something different in terms of our supply chain model, where we had a very asset-light manufacturing model? I think the asset-light manufacturing model will continue. We would like to continue to outsource our manufacturing primarily to EMS companies, which is what they are supposed to do very best. And we would continue to focus on product creation, sales, marketing, and all the other operational things that we've been doing. So I do not see that we getting into EMS manufacturing kind of things going forward. The third question you asked is about the 4G tender and the PLI. We have both of them. We have for the PLI schemes under the Government of India and are eligible for the scheme. So we would, of course, continue to look at that or the benefits out of it, and that would not change. The larger portfolio, we can potentially have an opportunity to increase or take more benefits of the PLI schemes, because we'll have a more number of products to sell to more countries around the world. And second thing is about the BSNL 4G tender. As I mentioned in the earnings call of Q1, we have formally participating in the process. At the proof of concept trials have already started, and we are engaging with BSNL as per the process.
Your partner is TCS, right, in the BSNL project?
Yes, we are partnering with TCS as the front end, and also ITI has technology from TCS, which where we, again, since I mentioned, we are partnering with TCS, we have a role to play.
Yeah.
So none of that is from my as a part of this.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sameer Raj from Nippon AMC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening and congratulations on the deal. So I'm just very curious, on apart from Tata's, which are the other partners we consider for strategic pair? And do you see any synergies with the telecom business of Tata, existing telecom business of Tata? That's question number one. Secondly, will there be any top level management changes? Will Tata be nominating any directors or including any senior members in the management? And third, regarding warrants, so are these warrants optionally convertible or compulsorily convertible? And are there any targets to be achieved for these warrants to trigger convertible? That's it. Thank you.
So your first question was that, how did this deal happen or did we consider other people? So actually, in a sense, we've of course been working with Tata Group companies over many years, with Tata Communications and Tata Teleservices being our customers. Of late, as the person in the earlier question had asked, we were working with Tata Consultancy Services on the 4G tender in BSNL. So there was an engagement going on between which was a business engagement in the normal course of business. What we also realized that there was a lot of potential for us to do a lot more together, and that is how this thing converged, and it resulted into the transaction that we talked about. Coming back to the second question that you had, synergy with other Tata Group companies, I already mentioned that we have been supplying equipment for more than 15 years to Tata Communications and Tata Teleservices, and the 4G tender with TCS is something which is currently ongoing. And then the last part is, are warrants optionally convertible? Yes, the warrants are optionally convertible, but 25% of the value of the warrants as per the regulation would be given at the time of the warrant issuance. The purpose of warrants, by the way, just to clarify, was that as we talked about in terms of, we have now a larger ambition, larger growth potential, and a larger opportunity that we are going after. So that would require us to have access to more amount of capital as and when we need it. So the whole purpose of keeping it in the form of warrant is that as and when we see any opportunity, for example, for an inorganic growth opportunity or making significant investment in any particular area of business, we should be able to draw down on that warrant. And the intent of the group is to really support the company in really scaling up much more faster than it has done in the past. So that's how the warrants would be really looked at.
Sure. And will there be any change about senior management?
Last question is about the senior management. Absolutely. As was stated in the press release, the Tata Group has all the confidence in the senior management and the entire team, including myself, Arnav, Kumar, Venkatesh, and entire the rest of the team will be continuing. We are actually quite excited about this whole thing because many of you who have been invested in the company for so many years also realize, as we've been communicating to all of you, that there's a lot of potential, there's a lot of TAM or addressable market in the world, but realistically we are not able to go after and really achieve that market for all the reasons that I mentioned in my presentation. So very exciting, a brand and the platform like the Tata Group actually gives us a significantly better opportunity to convert that TAM into real market share, and hence the management team is very excited, and we are all looking forward to phase three of our journey, as I call Tejas 3.0, and really achieve something that we really set out when we started this company to begin with.
Thanks so much, and this is very best.
Thank you, Samir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anpuranik from Enam Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sanjay. Congratulations to you for a brilliant transaction you have done. You can't get a better partner in India for Tejas than Tata's. A fantastic effort it is. I have a couple of questions. One is about you are expanding your portfolio. So the portfolio that includes the wireline and wireless products. And as it is, you have a huge design and R&D capability. So with this, what kind of addressable market expansion you have with the might of Tata's and their market access, global network, everything available to you, and your deep design focus? So would you like to be an ODM player going forward, or any other idea which will take you to the next level of scale.
Certainly, thanks, Puranik. Appreciate your sentiment. As you rightly said, the value of the strategic partnership, as I described in my presentation earlier, is really across two or three different dimensions. Number one dimension is that can we use the network and the relationships and the brand that exists with the Tata Group to sell a lot more of the product that we've already created. So that's really one level of synergy that we're looking at. And I think especially some of you have been tracking our international journey. We finally turned the corner last quarter when we had a majority of our revenues in the international form, right? 52% was international in Q1. So I think that journey can be accelerated where we were handicapped because of lack of relationships and so on and so forth. So that's number one. So sales side, I think more relationships, more brand recognition, plus many of the tier one customers around the world, they do look at companies with a strong balance sheet, companies will be around for the next 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, right? And I think that question hopefully will be settled once and for all, that we will be around for a long period of time. So that's point number one. The second thing which you mentioned is that expansion in terms of the product portfolio gives us an opportunity to actually, once you win the customers, once you are in a country, can you get a larger wallet share of that customer's telecom spend? And that is something which we also figured out, that if you're anyway being able to sell product one and product two, why not also have a higher, range of products to sell so that we can get a larger wallet share? And there again, I believe the relationship, and especially as we go in terms of accelerating our own organic development, and we'll also be openly looking at inorganic options to look at if we can fill up a gap in our product portfolio in any particular technology area, either from a time-to-market advantage or from any other angle that we see fit. So that will, again, allow us to do that. The balance sheet size that we have now really enables us to make things happen. So on an overall basis, the broad things that you mentioned is the way we are going to go. The specific plans, et cetera, and the concrete strategy, we'll, of course, be rolling it out over the next few months, and we'll be happily sharing with all the investors as well.
Mm-hmm. So the expansion would be in terms of, would you be expanding your R&D capacity, because that is the core of your business? So is that the approach to going forward, or leverage that to productionize and get into manufacturing on the ODM line?
No. So we do not believe that, as I mentioned earlier, that the plan is really to expand more on the R&D and the more on the product side, which is, both organically and inorganically to expand our product portfolio and R&D capacity, as you said. Second is into manpower, which is sales, marketing, and people. And third is manufacturing and operational capabilities. We do believe that we will continue to use the EMS model, which is the asset light model, where stuff, the design and everything will be done, but the low level assembly is being better done by our EMS partner. So I don't think we would be getting into that aspect of the business.
Correct.
All global companies around the world, like us, have actually over the years moved into the model that we started off to begin with.
Yeah, it makes good eminent sense to do that. So your addressable market will grow by what, 3x, 4x, how big it will be?
I would not put a number right now. I think the good news for us is that the addressable market in telecom equipment is very large. As I mentioned in my presentation, it's around $150 billion. So luckily for us,
I've seen IT services, though they testing the whole world is my market.
Absolutely.
But the ability to reach those markets requires all the firepower. Today you have the firepower.
Absolutely.
So marketing in that context.
Yeah, your point is absolutely well articulated, that the target market is very large. But what was accessible to us because of our size or because of our product portfolio or because of our international reach, et cetera, was limited. And clearly, this number will increase. How much it is increased, we are not specifically, pinned it down. And as we go forward and as our, plans come out more clear, we will be able to articulate how that is expanding.
Congrats, Ranjay. You have done a brilliant job in the midst of all the crises in the last 2 years. From almost 20 throes of bankruptcy, you have taken the company back again. Fantastic. All the best to you.
Thank you and appreciate the support of all the shareholders.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mukul Garg from Motilal Oswal Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. You know, Sanjay, I think my question is similar to Mr. Puranik. And while we understand that it is, I think, a little bit too early to formulate some thoughts on, you know, how you are going to prioritize going forward, but if you can just share a few thoughts on, you know, you mentioned a couple of areas where you are going to invest, whether it is sales and marketing, product, you know, expansion, you know, whether it is about inorganic opportunities or, you know, so if you can just kind of, you know, kind of share some thoughts on initially, how do you see, you know, which one should come, you know, before and which one, you know, you can kind of push back a little bit in terms of priority right now. And also, you know, whether you look at India as a bigger market or you still have international markets as a main hope for you, given that, you know, you now have a much longer, you know, holding power and India itself is growing quite fast. So if you can just share some thoughts on how we should look at the business from 6 months to 1 year perspective in terms of direction.
So Mukul, so way it's going to pan out is that there will be multiple things we'll be working out in parallel. Number one is that, as I mentioned earlier, the existing products that we already have, can we sell a lot more of those both in India and outside of India? So I think there will be one series of activities or planning that will go around that line of thinking. The second thing in parallel which will happen, because there's also a time to market, you know, that we need to catch up on certain technologies or areas, we'll also be looking at to say that can we have to, you know, bolster our R&D in capacity, both organically and inorganically, to complete that. So I would say both of them would be happening in parallel. Having said that, any of the strategy will take a little bit of time to implement. First of all, the transaction has to close. It will take some time. But I don't expect any significant difference in any trajectory in the next you know, few quarters. But clearly, once we get all the strategy in place, once we get the you know, the details of the execution in place, we will come back and share with you in terms of materially when we can start seeing the difference. But definitely in the next few quarters, it will just take you know, time to just you know, put the right strategy in place.
Sure. No, thanks for taking my question. I'll get back into the queue.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashwini Agarwal from Ashmore Investments Management. Please go ahead.
Sanjay, congratulations. This is a wonderful transaction and, you know, I'm really, really enthused that you will finally be able to realize the full potential of the effort that you guys have put in over the last several years. Two questions. One is, you know, obviously this gives you the capital and this gives you the Tata brand name, which is recognized globally, and therefore access to a lot of customers, a lot of conversations which may not have been accessible to you in the past. But in the short run, when you speak about inorganic opportunities and you work with TCS and you worked with, you know, other group companies of Tata's, including Tata Teleservices, are there any bits and pieces within the Tata telecommunication R&D or product design or manufacture that you can kind of bring into Tejas? Is that one of the objectives, to consolidate all of Tata's communication R&D type of activity within Tejas?
So at this stage, it's a bit early to give any specific details on that, because we have not, you know, gotten into any discussion in terms of the telecom technology assets, if I were to simplify in a way, which are existing within other Tata Group companies. Clearly, from what we gather from the investment, and that's where, again, when I mentioned earlier, and it's very important, that the investment is from Tata's funds. So we clearly will have an opportunity to evaluate all the technology capabilities and other products, for example, which are available in other group companies. And the objective would be, of course, to synergize and leverage them. Specifically, what they are and how well we will be able to utilize is something that will take a little bit of time for us to determine. But clearly, the intent is to see if we can, you know, take advantage of those opportunities and create a healthier telecom equipment business, which is what we will be driving.
And would that also mean that you might have joint go-to-market proposals along with TCS, where TCS has a services engagement, but you could sort of work with them to provide some hardware solutions where required? Or is that also something that will evolve over a period of time?
Yeah, again, as you rightly said, whether it is TCS or Tata Communications or Tata Teleservices, all of these companies, have a presence in the telecom vertical, as you all know. And as someone asked the question earlier, in the BSNL engagement, we are working with TCS for the 4G project. So clearly, I think the intent is to look at synergies, intent is to find out ways that we can, benefit in a bigger way and create a win-win situation. But clearly, I mean, being separate companies, I'm assuming things will happen at a normal arm's length distance. And I clearly see that, those things which will come out clearer as we learn more about the different capabilities of the group and engage at more details in discussion, which will, of course, happen only after the transaction is consummated.
And the other question that I had was, and this relates to a question I'd asked you at the time when you presented your June quarter earnings, does this potentially change your approach to tier one telcos in US and Europe?
Definitely. Why just US and Europe? I would say worldwide. In fact, part of the reason where the strategic investment makes a lot of sense is that we always believe we had very good products, because think about it this way. Unless we didn't have good products, even the tier one telcos in India would not even buy a dollar worth or rupee worth of product from us if you are not as good as they get, right, in that sense. So clearly the products were there, but we did not have access to the tier ones around the world, because many of the tier ones, lack of brand was always a handicap. B, they would look at a larger balance sheet to say that if I'm going to give you a very large contract, do you even have the financial capacity to be able to successfully execute it and service it over the next 5-10 years, because that's what the tier ones look at. So I think all of those areas where we did not have adequate resources or the connections or the relationships, we hope this transaction will enable us. So yes, we will look at tier ones globally. In fact, this is exactly what I mentioned in my presentation as well, is that those are all things which we were earlier ignoring, or not ignoring, but we are not really thinking that they were addressable to us. But now we believe that the possibility or opportunity to address them has significantly increased once this transaction gets over.
And one blue sky question, right? Now, sitting where you are today, now with access to the best, one of the best brand names outside, out of India, and the balance sheet, and you had the technology capability anyway, do you think that if you were to look 5 years out, and let's forget $150 billion or the $10 billion that was your addressable space, as you've always pointed out earlier, I mean, do you think that 5 years out, we can aspire to be with a revenue line of, say, $1 billion plus 5 years out?
Clearly, we have an opportunity to be a much larger company than what we are today. What exactly is that number? Only time will tell. Do we believe in a large growth is achievable? Absolutely. Do we believe we have the products that, and can build more products to achieve a very large scale? Absolutely. Does this partnership give us a far better opportunity than we ever had before? Absolutely. So I would say the opportunity clearly exists. How soon it can happen or how much time it will take will clearly depend on how well we execute. And I think we have done a lot less with lot less resources. So with more resources, more relationships, we do believe and we have the confidence that we should be able to accelerate our growth, which is what I mentioned. And exactly where it will be, I'm sure time will tell, but we clearly are convinced that the opportunity which we can address and we can achieve is significantly larger than what we've been able to do in the past. So what that number is, unfortunately, I don't have any clear answer to give you, but definitely directionally, that's the direction you want to head into.
Sanjay, all the power to you and to your team, and all the best.
Thank you, Ashwini.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sunny Gosar from MK Ventures. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question and congratulations on this fantastic deal. I have two questions. First one is basically post this investment, the company will get infusion of about 1800 crores of cash, and the company already holds about 300 crores of cash. Plus, there will be some free cash generated from operations over the next 2-3 years. So assuming that we have access to a pool of say 2000 to 2500 crores of cash, what will be our priorities over the next couple of years in terms of investment into R&D, inorganic, and what else would, basically how will this large cash pool be utilized? If you can throw some perspective on that. And my second question is, in terms of the inorganic acquisitions or opportunities that we will explore, what would be our priorities on that? Will it be to acquire some new product lines, get access to customers through some international acquisition? So some thoughts on that.
No, Sunny, as you rightly said, we had 300-400 crores of cash. We are also generating cash as we've been doing over the past several quarters, and this 1800 crores of cash definitely gives us a very strong balance sheet. And that was exactly the intent. Because what we have really done structurally with this transaction is really increased our ambition. You know, we really want to say that there is a capability, there's a potential, there's an opportunity, as I mentioned, and it is something that we need to think differently. So the purpose of strengthening the balance sheet was to be able to go after ideas or go after things that we would have not gone if we would have stayed with the balance sheet size or without the strategic investment that we had. We would have definitely continued to grow and grow well as we were doing in the past many quarters, but we believe that this opportunity that we have got gives us a chance to accelerate all of that. So in terms of specifics of exactly where we would prioritize this capital, would it be in acquiring more products, more customers? I think those are all areas that we are carefully evaluating. And as I said, as soon as we get our arms around the transaction and in the next short period of time, hopefully not too distant future, we will come out with a more specific plan and, of course, share with you. But at this stage, I would say that the purpose was to have the balance sheet, have the connections, have the capital available so that whatever plan that we come up with, and which I'm sure will be a combination of some of the things that you already mentioned, will allow us to really make good use of the resources that we have and really use it to accelerate growth. And as the earlier question Ashwini was asking, to really have much larger aspiration, take larger bets, and really invest for the longer term. And those are all things which you only start thinking when you have a stronger balance sheet, when you have a stronger backing, and you would be handicapped into thinking that way, given the limited resources that one would have otherwise. So that's the way I would look at it. So definitely some of the areas that you mentioned are all those things which you're carefully looking at, but we would come back with a specific plan once we have done the work at our end on a more concrete basis.
Sure. And one more related question to this. So basically, in terms of the overall, you mentioned that there is $150 billion of telecom products market which is accessible, out of which I understand the current portfolio can service about $10 billion between India and global. Assuming wireless products, what does that, or if you can highlight that three or four segments, top segments in this $150 billion opportunity, and what would be our focus or top priorities in that?
So just to clarify, since you mentioned, see, the $150 billion is the total value of telecom equipment that the world buys every year, right?
Right.
So when we used to craft our addressable market share, it was a combination of two things. It was a combination of the product portfolio intersecting with the markets in which we are operating. So it's a combination of product market fit, as we were to call, because you may have a product portfolio, but in some very large country, which for example is in our neighborhood, we were not targeting for selling. That market was not really available to us, for example, right? So in that sense, 150 is just a factual number. which is basically the total amount of telecom equipment that the world buys. The $10 billion number was a combination of the product market fit, which means current products in the current market that they're selling. So what is going to happen, as I mentioned earlier in the call, we will be expanding our markets that we go after. In those markets, we are not going after certain kind of customers, including tier one customers, because of the reason that I highlighted earlier. So essentially, for the same product, we'll have a larger actual addressable market, like Puranik someone mentioned earlier on. Secondly, by expanding the product portfolio itself. So for example, we were doing optical primarily before. Now we have gotten into wireless. We'll be accelerating our investments into the wireless as well. So the product set itself will evolve. So how big that number goes to, I mean, it's a big number to begin with. I think the bigger challenge is our execution capabilities to really accelerate both the, you know, the larger sales of our existing products and, of course, you know, the induction of new products in our portfolio so that we can get a larger wallet share from the customers that we already have access to. So clearly, I would say, directionally, we'll be heading to a much larger addressable market or real addressable market. It's not going to happen overnight. It takes, you know, some amount of time for us to get our act together. And that's what we would really set out in our strategy in terms of, you know, what we plan to achieve over what period of time. But the real thought process here was that we need to think, you know, long term. We need to think of building a very, very sound enterprise which will, you know, stand the test of time and really realize the full potential. And that's why, you know, sometimes, you know, having all the resources lined up before you really want to take off is an essential thing. And that's really what we have tried to do with this partnership.
Great. Thanks for the detailed answers and congratulations once again. And look forward to hearing a more elaborate strategy for the next couple of years soon. Thank you.
Definitely. Thank you, Kani.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rupesh from Intel. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sanjay. Congratulations. Can you hear me? Sorry?
Yeah, we can hear you, Rupesh.
Yeah, okay. Congratulations on a fantastic deal. I really have three, four questions. So first one is, what is your market share now with India Private and this new deal? So what is your aspirational market share, let's say 3-4 years from now or 5 years from now? And then the broader context in this is like Huawei is like exiting this market, right? So can you comment on that?
So specifically, by the way, we have not been sharing market share data because for the Indian market, the market share data is very fuzzy. So there's no global, you know, credible research firm which gives that. Subjectively speaking, what we have been able to demonstrate over the past few quarters and with the new wins that we announced in, you know, Q4, Q1, and even, you know, before that, we clearly are heading in increasing our market share in India in the categories that we've been competing, which is optical transmission, FTTX, which is GPON and other technologies. And now we are entering on the wireless side as well with, you know, some of the engagements that we have with a few customers at the initial stages. And as you rightly said, some of the vendors would be having a reduced market share because of various governmental regulations, etc. And we do have an opportunity to increase our market share independent of them and because of them, if you were to look at it point of view.
So directionally,
directionally,
can we say at least 3 to 4x in the next 5 years? Huawei was, I think, 1/3 as per your DRSP. And you were at like 15%. Yeah.
It's hard to exactly pinpoint where we will be 3 to 4 years. But directionally, if we execute well, if we do what we are supposed to do in terms of our strategy, I'm clear that we should be able to improve the market share in India. And, you know, India is a large market. It will be a very large market going forward with all the FTTX rollouts. We are still at a nascent stage of that business. 4G expansions are still happening, like one of the large government operator is still not built its 4G network. 5G is going to happen starting from next year for the next many years. So we are really at the beginning of a long CapEx cycle in India, you know, based on fiber broadband, 4G, 5G expansion and so on. And we clearly believe that if we have the right products, if we can be competitive, which we have demonstrated amply in the past, we clearly have a shot at being a large player in this our home market.
Okay. Okay. The second question is, at a strategy level, do you think you will still remain a product company, or you will go into system integration kind of work also?
No, we are very clear. I think we want to be a product company. We as someone asked earlier, that we will not be getting into the EMS business, which is a separate skill set. It's a very asset heavy infrastructure that one is to create. We are not going to go down that.
I'm not asking about manufacturing. Sorry. I'm not asking about manufacturing. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I understand what you're asking. So we will not be going in that direction. And similarly, system integration is a completely different skill set as well. It requires putting together some pieces from us, some pieces from many other companies. And that's, again, another area where we believe that in the near term or in the medium term, we definitely don't think we'll be expanding. But again, our core strength is of building the best-in-class products. We'll be expanding our product portfolio. We'll be expanding our geographical reach with those products. And that's the way we see things going. Of course, when we come out with a more detailed strategy, we'll talk about if there's any other area we look at. But prima facie, this is what it looks like.
Okay. And then another question is, now you're looking at tier one, targeting tier one telco, AT&T's and Verizon's of the world, and then heavy players in Europe. So can you talk about, let's say, top three, four areas where you had, constraints or limitations because of our size before, and now you think that these three or four areas, now you have a better chance at cracking these players in terms of, I don't know, financially, technology-wise, other things, whatever. I mean, what were the problems you were facing now, which you think now you can address?
So, see, basically the way it works is a tier one telco win is not a single-dimensional decision. It's not just about technology, just about balance sheet, just about support, just about one dimension. It's a combination of variety of things. What I highlighted in my presentation earlier is that the fact that we could sell to the absolute top tier ones in India who want the latest technology, the most high quality product and competitive prices, and we can win there, we can increase market share, clearly gave us confidence that we have all the elements to succeed even globally. What was missing was really the access to those tier ones in terms of relationships. What was also missing is the fact that any new geography or new market that you go to, they may have some specific things which are related to that particular telco and our ability to make such investments in advance of the sales. It could mean they're looking at the balance sheet of the company to see whether you have the capacity to execute large contracts and can they trust you with those things. So it was a combination of all of those things which were kind of, and by the way, I must also say that it's not that we've not won international tier ones. We have won international tier ones in specific geographies where we focused on. We were winning them at a certain pace. We were winning our market share at a certain pace. And we were, continue to expand, as was evident in our quarterly results over the last few quarters. What this will allow us to do is potentially accelerate our journey in that direction. So that's the way to think of in terms of what's going to happen differently.
Okay. And then last question, Sanjay, on technology side is, we have been more or less a follower in technology. An example that comes to my mind is in 800 gigahertz DWDM product, for example. Our product will be ready only in 2023, but if you listen to Ciena or Infinera, they are already deploying 800G in a long haul site. So do you now think that your technology roadmap will be accelerated and then we will move from technology follower to a technology leader strategically over the next 5 to 10 years?
So first of all, I would like to correct you a little bit. You are not a technology follower, and maybe one particular example that you take is more of a components play. 600 gig or 800 gig components we can just buy off the shelf from certain suppliers. Whereas certain of our competitors may have chosen to build those components in-house. And it's not exactly clear in the longer term which of the two is a better strategy. There are many areas of technology which I do not want to get into the details on this specific call because the purpose of this call is different, where we are actually the best in class in the world. And I have no qualms in saying that. So I don't think it would be accurate to say that we have been a follower of technology and this will allow us to become a leader. maybe the thing which we are trying to do is, given our balance sheet size, given our capacity of R&D available, we had to pick and choose the areas in which we wanted to focus and where we saw the maximum chance of success given our customer base. So I talked about the product market fit earlier on. So really our limitations on technology, or what one would call as the leading edge of technology, was not limited by our ability to actually create those technology products. I mean, we are all from India. We know that if someone in the world can build a product, we can build it from India. It was really our ability to say that even if I build this product, will a customer buy this from me, or will they use my size, or will they use my balance sheet strength to still select someone else? So our limitations on certain aspects of technology were from that side. As we make our strategy, I don't think we might overnight suddenly change that, okay, now that we have more balance sheet strength, let's go and investing much more ahead of technology curve like anybody else in the world does. It will still be a judicious call in terms of product market fit, because even the market opening of different kinds in international tier one is not an overnight activity. It will take time. And we just want to make sure that we don't invest ahead of the curve, we don't fall behind the curve. And if we can do a good job of product market fit, that will allow us to use the resources that we have available in a much more judicious way. But I must also tell you, even though we can say that we have $300-400 million of capital available, but if you compare that with some of our competitors, they still have maybe 10 times as much capital available. So the discipline of technology investment, the discipline of market investment, the discipline of cash flow, which we have all gotten as a basic DNA of the company, I think will continue, except that with a larger set of resources available, hopefully we will be able to do a much bigger job and basically do more with more rather than trying to do more with less in the past.
Okay, that's okay. And then one if I squeeze in quickly one data question. At product mix level, can you tell us, let's say, 3 years from now or 5 years from now, how much will be optical, how much will be wireless, how much will be wireline, some rough one third or optical will still dominate?
I think it's a bit early to answer that question, because we still haven't detailed out our medium-term and long-term roadmap in terms of product strategy and technology. So I think it's a bit difficult to give a precise answer to that. But what I did mention earlier is that we would be graduating from a wireline-only company to a more full-stack supplier. Full-stack doesn't mean every piece of technology that goes into the telecom value chain. We will still have to think of areas where we can be successful, areas where we can have a competitive strength. So I would say it would be a difficult question to answer at this early stage as to exactly what our product mix will be 2 to 3 years. Except that we will have a richer portfolio of product than we have today, and we will be addressing a larger market given where we are today.
Mr. Rupi, this is the operator here. Excuse me. Request you to please join back the queue for follow-up questions. So we have other participants waiting in the queue. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Arun Prashist from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Actually, my question is already answered. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pankaj Gupta from Ratnavali Investments. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Congrats, Sanjay, for this value creative deal. Most of my questions have answered. I have just one remaining. Sir, do we have any product overlap with any of the Tata Group companies' ecosystem as of now? And the second is that with Tata Group companies' ecosystem, do we see the possibility into medium to long term of getting into any new sectors apart from telecom?
The answer to both the questions, as of now, based on our limited understanding of what exists in the other Tata Group companies, we don't think we have any overlap. If at all, there could be complementary things, but we don't know that because we've not yet done the full exercise. The second question is, and what is part of what I answered as a part of one of the questions earlier, is that over the next few months, once the transaction is over, we will actually do a detailed exercise to see what other things are available in the ecosystem, and is there a way to leverage it in a win-win way? So we will be exploring that. The second thing is that in the medium to long term, do we get into new sectors? No, I think we are very clear on what our core strengths are, and which is what has been articulated. I'm not going to repeat that. So I think we'll stay focused on what we do well, except that the platform available, the opportunity available will be bigger, and the opportunity to accelerate our journey will be faster. But I don't think it would be prudent for us to do things which we are not good at this stage.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Tejas Seth from Nippon India. Please go ahead.
Good evening, Sanjay. Congratulations on the deal. I have three questions. One, is there any business of Tata Group where we had some, let's say, market share, and which this deal can help us to gain larger market share of their telecom supply?
Tejas, we do business with couple of the service provider companies in the Tata Group, and the fact that they have selected us on merit, on competitiveness in the past, and we have had long-standing relationships is a good sign. Clearly, if there's synergies and if there's more market share that we can get from them because of better value proposition to them, I'm sure we will definitely explore those opportunities. Given that each company operates on an arm's length basis, I'm sure those guiding principles will be followed. But clearly, being a part of the group, we will aspire to increase our market presence where possible in the group companies.
Okay. And does this deal widen the horizon of our PLI participation?
In a way, I don't know the answer is, because we have applied for PLI based on our products and our... So the way the PLI scheme works is you get a certain percentage of the incremental sales that you had in 1920 as a base year, which was actually quite a low base year for us, right? So if you are able to, as a part of this deal, over the next 5 years, there is a possibility that we should be able to accelerate our revenue growth, and that in turn we could potentially accelerate the amount of benefits that we can get out of the PLI scheme. But again, the PLI scheme we have just applied for, there's still approvals to come from the government, and once the scheme starts getting rolled out, we would start seeing the benefits of the same.
Okay. And on the talent hiring and even the chip sourcing, again, does this whole deal making us a bigger company move us in a very comfort zone towards chip sourcing?
So you have two questions. Let's talk of the talent question first, and let's talk of the chip question next. So on a talent question, the view that we all in the management team have is the fact that any bright engineer or very talented talent in the country or around the world who would have heard about the deal, and trust me, there's been lots of people who have reached out to us and complimented us for the opportunity that this deal presents to us. So we would really be hoping and looking forward to that the best and the brightest talent is available in wireline, wireless, packet switching, routing, network management. They would be excited to work in Tejas because of the opportunity that we can potentially create as for everybody, right? So I do see a lot of excitement in the job market where people feel that we could be a good company to be a part of. That, of course, we will have to continue to see how it actually pans out. The second question that you talked about was the chip supply situation. A chip supply situation is a tricky situation for everybody in the world, no matter who you are. Clearly, I think with the backing of the Tata Group and potentially the relationships they may have with some of the larger chip suppliers, because they do have different touch points and different business engagement points with them, we will have to explore if any of those relationships can actually come into benefiting. But independent of that, as I had mentioned in our Q1 earnings call, as a team, we have been taking a lot of proactive actions to make sure that the business upswing that we are seeing in our business is potentially serviceable by securing the components at the right time. But that is an evolving situation that we continue to monitor.
Okay. So just last question, would the name of the company be changed to any of the, to represent the Tata brand?
Good question. we will share that with you once we've met internally and, figured out the merits of, a name change together with the Tatas. Clearly, Tejas has its own brand name. Tatas, of course, the brand, I don't even need to comment on that. So I think the objective would be to really look at the best, whatever is the best for the business of the company. We would be taking that option. But that is something after the transaction is consummated, we will take a very, very detailed view. And I think we are very, very well-respected people in our boards and all that who will help us with those decisions.
Okay. Fine. Thanks a lot for answering.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bharat Seth from Quest Investments. Please go ahead.
Hi. Congratulations, Sanjay, on excellent deal. Sanjay, I mean, the way in telecom market is moving more on the RAN-based networking than the whole hardware base. So how much of our portfolio is consist which we can be complying to this, and so more opportunity may emerge and some of the portfolio may go because may not be usable? If you can give some color on that.
So if I were to paraphrase your question, it is about that in the new standards in the telecom which are evolving,
yeah,
they are disaggregating the hardware and software differently. And right. in that direction, how do we play in? So actually, if you look at one of the bullets which I mentioned in my opportunity slide as Tejas 3.0 was exactly this, that there is a technology disruption happening in the world, which is what we call the softwarization of networks, where the things get disaggregated, new open architectures come in where things can happen. And if you really see different times, businesses or new entrants into existing businesses, the best opportunity happens when there's a technology disruption point. And we actually see that as an opportunity. Lot of our architecture of the products and the way the company is built in fact, in the earlier many calls, we keep talking about software-defined hardware architecture that the company actually has adopted over the years. So that has been our DNA, that programmability or being able to take advantage of such disruptions is going to be good for the company. So I think we are well prepared for that. We have a very strong technology team who keeps looking ahead of how the world and the networks are evolving, and we definitely try to head in that direction. So I think we are well prepared, and it's an evolving and continual exercise. And I think technology disruptions are things that we look forward to because it gives us new opportunities.
And that will be a more better margin business as well as, vis-a-vis existing business?
That's, again, difficult to say because better margins is a function of competitive landscape and how things evolve. So it's a bit premature to head in that direction. But definitely as a company, we acknowledge it, we understand it, and we are prepared well for addressing those opportunities.
And do we think that any of the product may become obsolete?
No, I don't think so. Every product, every technology continues to evolve. And one of the reasons for us to continue to invest in R&D, even when our revenues were down, we never blinked. We always invested in R&D, was to ensure that we never get obsoleted, we never become irrelevant, we never have a situation where we did not make the right investments and the competition took over. On the contrary, we keep doing what we're doing. With the resources that we had, we focused harder and made sure that at least whatever we are doing, we do the best job. So I don't think we have any obsolescence risk in our product. In fact, to the contrary, we always believe that more technology disruptions are better for nimble companies like us compared to larger companies who may have, whose ship the movement takes more time. So that's the way I would put it. Thank you. And in fact, this last, given the time, we have already overshared the time, so maybe we can take one last question and then wrap up.
Thank you and all the best, Sanjay.
Thank you. We take the last question from the line of Chetan Gupta from Savina Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sanjay. Sanjay, I think what nobody asked was how have some of your other clients reacted? I think that's important, right? Because you service a lot of people. Are other clients a bit nervous? Are they seeing this in the same light that you are? I think it will be helpful to answer that.
Now, good question, Chetan. Again, early days. It's just been 2 working days since we announced this deal. But we have been in touch with some of our larger clients. So far, I can say at least the ones in India that matter to us. I can say that there's been very positive response. In fact, I must tell you that at least the big clients in India always had a lot of pride in Tejas. They've supported us across the board. And with this transaction, they feel very excited that you know we have the backing and the balance sheet to really become a much larger company that all of us, especially from India, would feel proud of. So I would say the initial reaction has been very positive, not just from clients, I would also say from government officials, or pretty much everybody in the ecosystem, from our component suppliers to our employees to a lot of people in general, you know, I would say, you know, in the academia. It is something that everybody feels is the right direction to head into. We are excited. A lot of people, all our stakeholders seem to be excited, from customers to suppliers. So I think it's a good start. In anything like this, it's execution that matters. And we are really looking forward to taking this opportunity and making the best of it. And over the next few months or whatever time that we come back with a most specific strategy, we would love to share and share the progress around it.
Wonderful. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this was the last question for today. I now hand the conference over to the management for the closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Thank you. I already actually made my closing comments, and all I can say that when we were looking at this deal, we looked at all stakeholders, and in our wisdom, we believe that you know this was a good move. This was something which allows us to accelerate the aspirations and the vision that we set out. And we are very excited with this partnership, and we hope that we will continue to share our roadmap and the milestones and the progress in the coming days. And we do believe that this can create a lot of value for all stakeholders. So thank you, and look forward to your continued support, like you've been giving us in the past and future as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Motilal Oswal Financial Services, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.